Hey, I'm so happy you guys are here. New moms are my favorite. So a full room of new moms is really exciting for me. Okay, you are at Help for New Moms. And this is a class description. It's a workshop addressing common concerns of mom and the needs of a baby in the first year. I hope for this class to build your confidence as a new mom, learn some practical tips, and receive encouragement for this big life transition. We'll also discuss changes to anticipate many of your relationships. So if you're here, it's because you read this description and you were like, I'm into that, I'm gonna go to that class. But some of you are pregnant, and I'm gonna say some things that you might not be able to grasp yet. Some of you have a baby close to a year, maybe, and you're like, I already did that, I don't need to hear about it. There might be things that you already know, or maybe I'm gonna say some things that you just can't relate to. Just hang in there, even if you think that there's a section that doesn't apply to you. My mission today is A, for you to experience joy the first year of your baby's life. You already know that when you have a baby, there are so many anxieties and difficulties that come in the first year. There's ones that you already know to expect, and there's ones that you have no idea to expect. B, I want to build your confidence in your ability to parent your own baby and your ability to make decisions. When I had my first kid, I had already nannied for two newborns, and I was still shocked at things that happened with my baby and in my household. Three, I want to give you some practical information and resources about babies. Maybe some of you don't have any experience handling a baby. Maybe there weren't babies in your family. Maybe you don't have any friends with babies. Just sometimes people don't have experience with babies and you need a little bit of info. And then I want to give you some tools to navigate the first year with regards to things like your marriage, other relationships in your life, how your time's going to be spent, what community is going to look like. Changes are coming or have already come for you in every area of your life. And I have gathered a lot of ideas. I have screwed up a lot. I have received a lot of advice. But I'm not an expert. And this isn't a class instructing you how to raise your baby. It's a class to help you navigate raising your baby. Okay, so who am I? Like, what am I even doing up here? My name's Amber Liston. I am married to Ben Liston, also. We got married in 2004. I was 20, and he was 21, so we were just little babies when we got married. We waited 8 years. I was 28 when we had our first kid, and our marriage was going really good. We had kind of settled into our vibe, and we were pals. And becoming parents really rocked us. And he is and was then a pediatric nurse practitioner. So you'd think, you know, this guy will have some cool tips and ideas. It's not true. Did he know what to do medically? Totally, yes. Other stuff? No, we still had to figure it out. He's still a pediatric nurse practitioner, had a private practice in Upper Arlington. And I do admin for both this church and the school affiliated with our church in Clintonville. These are my sweet little babies. This is from the first time I did this class. And they were six. That's Piper at the top. She was six. Lucian with the Band-Aid on his head, 23 stitches. Poor buddy. He's handling it. He did great. He was five, and sweet little baby Irving with his golf clubs was three the first time I did this. I had three kids in 3.5 years. When Irving showed up, Piper was 3.5. Things were crazy. There's a lot I don't remember from that time frame. And each baby was very different. All of my labors were very different. All my pregnancies were very different. And these kids to this day remain very different from each other. Here they are now. Sweet Piper is 11, and Lucian is 10, and Irving is 8. We love the crew. If it's summertime, you will be hard-pressed to find us doing something other than watching or talking about soccer. So there they are with the crew cat recently. I had to dig really deep, you guys, to find pictures that weren't crew-related. So there they are. I have a burden for new moms. New moms are my favorite. I love you guys. I'm so happy that you're here and that we get to chat. And where did this burden come from? I can see in my mind the exact moment that I remember being like, I'm supposed to have joy about this right now, and it is being stolen from me. I was reading a book about getting my baby to sleep alone in her crib.
Did you start
recording? I did, yeah. In her crib by herself, I was going crazy. She wouldn't sleep by herself. I was like, I gotta do something about this. So I get a book from the library, and it was like, yada yada, a couple good things, a couple nice ideas, yada yada. And if your baby doesn't end up sleeping by themselves, they're gonna get ADHD or something, you know, something ridiculous. And I was like, this book can forget about it. I marched it directly back to the library and was like, I'll figure this out by myself. These books are like not helpful a lot of the times. And then I had a bunch of interactions with new moms, and one mom in particular who I had sold my pregnancy pillow, that like C pillow, sold it to somebody, and she came over to my house to pick it up, and she's like, you're an expert now, right? Because you have three kids, and I'm gonna come to you about everything because you're the expert. And I was like, I don't know that I'm the expert, but I'll talk to you about your baby. I would love that. And she and these other new moms have so many questions, right, about how to do it right. What does it look like to parent this baby in the correct way? And mom's just losing so much sleep, having so much anxiety, because it's not going how it's supposed to. So that is how this burden got started. So I think we got to talk about how the culture that we live in threatens to and actively wants to steal your joy. The culture says that there's really certain and specific ways that you should be raising your baby. Everybody has an opinion. Even Rhoda, my elderly, childless neighbor, I'm walking up the street one day holding my sleeping, sweet little baby Irving, and she's like, you know he's never going to sleep by himself now. And I was like, thanks, Rhoda, and moved on with my life. She has a way that she thinks the best. Everybody's got a way that they thinks the best. And our culture's under really heavy influence, right, from advertising executives and people with the most money. Like, are you supposed to look like this and dress like this when you have a baby? I don't even know if this girl on the right has a baby. Like, maybe we're supposed to see some feet, but maybe she just bought the stroller. I don't know. So these are what shows up, you know, on Instagram or in a magazine, some kind of ad that you're meant to look like this. Is your baby's room supposed to look like this? This room's all white, you guys. It should not look like this. This is not going to work out well. But maybe you want it to. I don't know. But this is what they think it should be like. There are 1, 2, 3 places for a baby to sleep in this room. You'll need that many. Are you doing it wrong if you're not co-sleeping with your husband and your baby and your toddler and you have a dock-a-tot? You know, these are the messages that are out there. Are you doing it wrong if you're not wearing your baby in a variety of 4 different types of slings? Are you supposed to have all of them? Like, which one is meant to be the best? Are you doing it wrong if you're not nursing your toddler in matching clothes? Like, these are the messages, right? Are you a terrible mom if your gear isn't new, if you just have a bunch of hand-me-downs? Are you doing it wrong if your baby's not on a sleep schedule? or a specific feeding schedule. Do not search sample schedules on the internet. Like, which is right? Which of these is correct? Who knows? Okay, so you guys don't have to do any of this. You don't have to buy into any of these photos. You don't have to agree that any of these photos are correct. You don't have to let the trends of our culture and the expectations of other people ruin the joy that you're meant to have during this first year. Our culture, wants to really distract you from what's important, which is loving your baby and nurturing your baby. They want to do it with items and with expectations. They want to have you question what it is that you're doing. If you think about how our culture talks about babies, it's not often about the joy and the happiness that you get in the first year of having a baby. It's all about like missing sleep and fighting with your husband and how your life is going to go down the drain. I had a friend, before my friend group started having kids, I asked my pal, hey, when do you guys think you're going to have kids? And he said, well, we're going to have kids when we think we're done having fun. And I was like, oh, I just wanted to know like a time frame. I didn't know we're having a deep philosophical conversation here. But that's the vibe, right? You have a baby, fun is gone, and your life goes down the drain. That's what our culture tells you. And I think for a minute we got to talk about Satan. You're at a church building, after all, right? So the enemy of the Lord is playing a role here in this situation. Whether you like it or not, the world that we're in is a spiritual battleground. So Satan is working through our culture to make sure that your joy gets stolen. He doesn't want good things for people. So like you don't already have enough to worry about in terms of yourself and your baby, Amber is going to show up and talk about Satan, right? Probably weren't expecting Satan today, but here we go. 1 Peter 5:8 says, stay alert. Watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. In the first year of your baby's life, you are weak and you are tired and you are anxious. A really big change has occurred and you're super vulnerable to Satan and his schemes. Satan hates God, and he is actively trying to thwart God's plan in this world and in your life. He wants you to feel miserable and alone and joyless. He wants to divide you from people and from the Lord. Division's a really big tactic that he wants to use. So there's a lot more that I could say, and we could spend so much time talking about Satan's tactics and his schemes, and I wish that we had more time. But later, when we go through relationships, think about the ways maybe that Satan might want to alienate you in each of the relationships we're going to talk about. And then remember that sometimes during this first year of your baby's life, your thoughts are influenced by hormones and lack of sleep. And sometimes they're influenced by Satan trying to steal your joy and make you miserable. So make sure to be talking about the thoughts that you're having. Okay, back to your joy getting stolen. Your expectations are going to play a really large role in that. And I have this quote hanging up in my house that my kids have actually started to memorize that says, every unrealistic expectation is a resentment waiting to happen. And you have expectations. They are real. They come from the culture. They come from your family. They come from your friends. All those people and things have helped to shape your expectations. So you got to stay aware of what expectations are. You're going to have them during pregnancy. You want a beautiful and textbook and perfect and easy pregnancy. You're going to have them for labor. You're going to have expectations for right after your baby's born. You're going to have them for when you get home. You're going to have them for the entire first year. Going to keep having expectations. One time I got gestational diabetes. It was the third time. I didn't do anything different. it was the same life that I was living. And they're like, you have gestational diabetes. Bummer. We had to handle that. One time I had a baby, and he ended up on life support in the NICU. That I wasn't expecting that to happen. He's fine now. Two times I had really awful, terrible, miserable sleepers, you guys. Miserable. And then the third baby was a perfect sleeper. What a gift. But it's important to expect the unexpected. I wasn't expecting gestational diabetes the third time around. I wasn't expecting a four-week early baby who went to the NICU. But these things happen. So start expecting the unexpected. You have to spend some time thinking, do I even know what my expectations are? And an expectation has gone unmet when you experience a disappointment, when something you wanted to happen doesn't. That was an expectation. Like I said, you have expectations that you don't even realize. You have to think, a way to discover what your expectations might be is you think, okay, if this thing happened, I wouldn't be able to handle it. I would go crazy. I would be miserable if X thing happened. Or what thing would make me feel like a failure? Feel like I wasn't able, you know, I'm not able to do this. I'm screwing everything up. If something happens and that thing derails you, that means you had an expectation. And then new expectations are going to show up. You're going to start expecting things from your baby that you didn't even realize you were going to expect. You're going to expect things from yourself, from your spouse, from other people, your friends, your Bible study pals, some lady who didn't hold the door from you in the way to Kroger. You're going to expect that she should have. They're going to be showing up all the time. A lot of expectations. So we have all these expectations, but what are the actual needs of a baby? And these things should be the filter through which you can temper your expectations. Okay, I have these expectations, and I think X, Y, and Z is supposed to happen, but what are the actual needs of this baby for this first year? And like we said, everything and everyone is going to try to convince you what your baby's needs are. You'll try to convince yourself, the world's going to try to convince you, your mom, the TV, your elderly childless neighbor across the street, will all tell you what they think your baby should be doing. But these things here are going to be actual developmental necessities, right? This is research. These things are research from the National Institute of Health. But you're going to see the Lord working in these expectations or these needs here. There's interaction, touch, stable relationships, safe, healthy environment, communication, play, music, reading, and sleep. So we're going to go over each of these. Okay, so here's some qualifications. You got to keep grace in mind as we go through this list. I'm going to suggest that you do things or interact with your baby in certain or specific ways, but some days you're going to be really tired. Some days you're going to be really frustrated with yourself and with your baby. Things that worked for your friend's kid aren't working for you. And then remember, I'm not an expert. I did get this info from an expert. When my first baby was born, I went to this new mom's class at Riverside. And there, the person who ran it was a doctor, Dr. Yvonne. And she had a PhD in parent education. And I'm like, what do you do with this? Why did you get this? She's like, this is why I do it. I am a parent educator. I teach parents how to parent. And then we became pals, and she helped me develop a lot of stuff for this section. And their guidelines. These are not hard and fast rules. And then third, remember that the Lord is in control. Your baby is going to turn out the way that God wants him or her to under his sovereign hand. And the Lord loves your baby so much. Okay, so a baby needs interaction. Interactions with people and objects are as necessary to a baby as nutrients. The brain is constantly growing and developing. So different experiences are going to cause a brain to develop in different ways. The key to interaction is matching the adult's behavior to the baby's needs. A new sweet little baby is actually assessing whether their cries for food or comfort are being addressed or ignored. And if adult responds, the baby infant feels secure and then can focus on exploring the world and growing his brain. Maybe you guys hear about the fourth trimester or the notion that you can't spoil a baby under 3 months. And largely that's very true. Just your baby's got needs and you meet them. Sleep needs, feeding needs, touch needs, it's gonna happen in different ways. Maybe you're all touched out and you can't hold your baby, but it needs to be touched. You can give it to somebody else, hand that baby off, and someone else will bop it in a carrier on the side of the room. You can get creative. Technology use is a thing. I don't think that you should always be off of your phone or turn your TV off every time you're interacting with your baby all day. But I do think you need to be careful when you're feeding your baby or when you're singing to your baby that they have your face and your eyes a lot of the time, that you're interacting, that they have your attention. They need your voice, they need your face, and they need your attention. So just be aware of how much time you're spending on an electronic. And then as they get older, be aware of how often you're giving them an electronic toy to play with. I also don't want you to think you have to be constantly, every moment of every day, be interacting with your baby. It is fine to do the dishes, and it is fine to fold the laundry. It is fine to read a book. All those things are great. Your baby can play on the floor for 10 minutes alone or interact with another adult. You don't have to be constantly addressing your baby's needs. Somebody does, though. Sorry. Somebody should be. Okay, a baby needs touch. Touch is critical to development, lets an infant know that they are loved, cared for, and reassured. Touch is going to send signals to the brain, telling it to grow. And these signals are as vital as vitamins and nutrients for brain growth. Massage is really good for an infant. There's a lot of research about how great infant massage is. They might develop movement earlier, they might sleep better, they might have less colic. You can find some kind of baby massage class out there. There's plenty of them. And then we all know that the absence of touch is really harmful. Without touch at an early age, development's gonna get stunted. We hear those stories about babies in some remote orphanage who just lay in a crib their entire lives the first year, and then are stunted developmentally. So they need to be touched and held. Think about when they're in your belly. They're constantly squeezed and massaged and touched, so then when they come out, they keep wanting that. They want to be close, they want to be touched and moved. The next thing a baby needs is stable relationships. A loving, consistent relationship with an adult can offset stressful situations. They need somebody to help them interpret the life experiences. This can be you, can be your husband, can be a grandparent, can be a friend. Doesn't have to be one adult stable relationship. It can be multiple. They need stability because stress is gonna make the brain work harder. When a baby's trying to learn something new, and their brain is stressed, the research says their brain will work 7 times harder than if they're not stressed. So having a trusted, loved, and loving adult around is really good for the brain. A baby needs a safe and healthy environment. You gotta create a safe place for an infant. You're gonna be really surprised hopefully you're not surprised because you don't find out what a non-rolling baby can actually roll off of. You got to be careful about bedding. You got to be careful about blankets. And then create a safe space when your baby becomes mobile. My kids all walked at 11 months, so they started walking in the first year. Or when they start crawling, you gotta figure out what a safe space looks like. And the tip here is invite a toddler over to show you what needs to be baby-proofed. Have your friend who's got like a two-year-old come over. Let that baby loose in your house, and that will tell you, okay, I need a lock for this. I need to put this up. I need a blah, blah, blah. That is really helpful when you're trying to figure it out. A safe and healthy environment is going to include food, and we could talk for a million years about the debates, right? What is better, breast or formula? Homemade baby food or canned baby food? Organic food or normal food, baby-led weaning or pureed food. There's enough debates around. You can find them and get into them. But the truth is that you get to decide. You get to decide what the best way to feed your baby is. As long as your doctor is fine with how your baby's growing, you are doing it correctly. Okay, a baby needs communication. The acquisition of language is a complex skill, and a baby's ability to communicate begins at birth. They start by crying, obviously. Then they're cooing. Then they're making some kind of intentional sound to get your attention. And then they're talking. And that starts as soon as they come out and start crying to say that they're cold and it's too bright. And let me back in that belly. It's really important to engage your infant, new, very young baby in conversation. The plasticity of the brain is what makes learning a language possible. The more words your infant hears, the more connections are made, and babies and children need to be interacting to learn a language. You should talk to your baby. You should talk a lot. You should talk very frequently. Before I had kids, I had this friend, and I was over her house, and she was changing her baby's diaper. She's like, okay, Ava, I'm going to put you here. I'm going to hold on to you, and I'm going to reach for a diaper, and I'm going to put it under your body, and I'm going to take off your old diaper. And as she was changing her baby, she was narrating to this baby everything that she was doing, and I was like, man, this seems really exhausting to be constantly narrating the world to this baby. But it's really necessary. Makes a lot of connections in your baby's brain. If you're quiet by nature, some people are just quiet, right? Don't talk very much. Just try to remember to think aloud at times. Think about what you're doing. Tell your baby. Talk to your baby about the book that you're reading or the Netflix show that you're watching. Just try to remember that narrating and speech and speaking makes a lot of brain connections. Your baby needs play, music, and reading. Play is learning, and so many things are learned through play for babies. It is the play experience and not always the toy that helps the brain grow. We got to play with our babies, right? Mr. Rogers said, play is often talked about as if it were a relief from serious learning. But for children, play is serious learning. Play is really the work of childhood. And then music brings play and learning together, incorporates coordination, language, memory, imagination, building connection between people. Music is really important for babies. And books. Introduce your baby to books early and often. It's another thing that causes connections in the brain. Books help with language and connecting eventually the written word to the spoken word. Okay, ready? Your baby's got to sleep. It's just the most dreaded of all topics. And like every point before this, it's a developmental necessity. I'm really sorry, I don't have like a magical formula, and this is not a how-to workshop. I cannot tell you the best way to achieve good sleep. I had a child on the floor in my bedroom because of a bad dream last night, and then I had another kid come in twice, and a third kid come in once. Like I said, there are 11, 10, and 8. I have not arrived at good sleepers. Like, it's just not in the cards for me. I wish I could promise you that you'll get out of the first year and it will get better, and I'm not here to discourage you. Maybe it will get better. One of my kids is a really great sleeper, just had a bad dream last night and had to come in. But this is the most dreaded of all topics because it might just go on for your whole life. Do I wish my boy would sleep? God, yes, I really do. But there's something, he's always spinning up here, he's got a lot of thoughts going on, he's got a real vivid picture memory, and if he sees something on TV, you can just, the night is over. So I wish I could promise you guys that you'll sleep 100% of the nights when your kid's out of the first year. It will get better, but it might not always be easy and perfect. You probably have gotten or will get a million questions about sleep, right? Are you getting any sleep? How's your baby sleeping? Where is your baby sleeping? What time does your baby go to bed? What time do you get up? How many times do they get up in the night? So many questions. And there, this one mom has some really hilarious advice that went viral. This is long, but it's good, so hang in there. Okay. You shouldn't sleep train at all before a year, before 6 months, or before 4 months. But if you wait too late, your baby will never sleep without you. College-age children don't need to be nursed, rocked, helped to sleep, so don't worry about bad habits. Nursing, rocking, singing, swaddling, etc. are all bad habits and should be stopped immediately. Naps should only be taken in the bed, never in a swing, car seat, stroller, or when worn. Letting them sleep in the car seat or swing will damage their skulls. If your baby has trouble falling asleep in a bed, put them in a swing, car seat, a stroller, or wear them. Use the crib only for sleep and keep it free of distractions. If your baby's having trouble adjusting to the crib, let them play in it first. If they wake up at night and want to play, put fun toys in the crib to distract them. Put the baby in a nursery, a bed in your room, or in your bed. Co-sleeping is the best way to get sleep, except it can kill your baby, so never ever do it. If your baby doesn't die, you'll need to bed share until college. Keep the room warm, but not too warm. Swaddle the baby tightly, but not too tightly. Put them on their backs to sleep, but don't let them be on their backs too long or they'll be developmentally delayed. Give them a pacifier to reduce SIDS, but be careful about pacifiers because they can cause nursing problems and stop your baby from falling asleep, from sleeping soundly. If your baby sleeps soundly, they'll get SIDS. Don't let your baby sleep too long, except when they've been napping too much, then you should wake them. Never wake a sleeping baby. Any baby problem can be solved by putting them to bed earlier, even if they're waking up too early. If your baby wakes up too early, put them to bed later or cut out a nap. Don't let them nap after 5 p.m. Sleep begets sleep, so try to get your child to sleep as much as possible. Put the baby to sleep awake, but drowsy. Don't wake the baby if it fell asleep while nursing. You should start a routine and keep track of everything. Don't watch the clock. Put them on a schedule. Scheduling will make your life impossible because they will constantly be thrown off of it and you will become a prisoner in your home. Using the cry it out method will make them think they've been abandoned and will be eaten by a lion shortly. It also causes brain damage. Not getting enough sleep will cause behavior and mental problems. So be sure to put them to sleep by any means necessary, especially cry it out, which is the most effective form. Cry it out is cruel beyond belief and the only thing that truly works because parents are a distraction. Formula and solid foods will help the baby sleep longer. Solid foods shouldn't be given at night because they might wake your baby. Don't stop the baby from nursing when asleep. Be wary of night feeds. If you respond too quickly with food or comfort, your baby is manipulating you. Babies can't manipulate. Babies older than 6 months can manipulate. Sleep when the baby sleeps. Clean when the baby cleans. Don't worry. Stress causes your baby stress, and a stressed baby won't sleep. Okay, right? That's fine. This is fine, you guys. Okay, so this is enough advice, right? Have you heard all of these? Yes. This is literally every piece of sleep advice, all of the conflicting advice. And the author of this got interviewed, and she said, a lot of it is just really learning to read your own children rather than reading all the instructions that the books have to give you. Okay, so this was a section on what a baby's needs are, right? Not a how-to. And for what's developmentally necessary for your specific baby's age, there's tons of resources out there, and milestones should always be discussed with your doctor. Okay, so those things are what's developmentally necessary and what's medically necessary. And those things matter a lot, and they're really important. But what also matters is what the Lord says. And here in Psalm 127, he says, behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. Okay, so children are a gift, right? They are a real blessing. And I think we need to strive to regard them as such. This should also be a filter for your expectations, that these babies are a blessing. And you probably have heard old women say, oh, this is so beautiful, and your baby is so great, and everything is so awesome. It goes so fast. Just hold on to it, enjoy it. And you roll your eyes at them. You're like, I wish it would go a little bit faster. I'm going crazy and I'm very tired. And it is so easy, you guys, especially when you are in the thick of it, to want to wish away the sleepless nights and the demands of feeding and the nap time schedule or whatever. And I had a pact with a friend. We said, we will never, ever sit around in our 50s, I'm 40 right now, and say, I miss my baby being a baby. We're never going to do that because this is so hard and it sucks and it's awful. But look at these little babies. These are my babies when they were babies. Like I said, 11, 10, 8. Poor little baby Irving had to have a sink. I don't know how old he was when he got his first bath. But it's on a towel in the sink. Sorry. At least someone cleaned you. I had a baby when I was 28, and now I'm 40, and she's 11. And I'm like, I miss you being that little. I didn't even make it to 50. I haven't even sat around with that friend and been like, so glad that's over. That sucked. Because I'm already like, shoot, I miss these little guys. They were great. And I tried to really hold on to that third baby being a little baby. And I really tried to enjoy it. And I wish I had done it more with the first two. Try to hold on to that joy that you get in them being so tiny and so little. Because the old women are right. We didn't want them to be right, but it turns out that they are. It's fleeting, and this phase is a literal drop in the bucket. There is so much joy to be found here in this phase. You just gotta grab it and seize it. Cute little babies. Okay. This is the biblical information about kids section. I maybe forgot to say that. Children have great use and purpose. Psalm 8, 1 and 2 says, Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory in the heavens. Through the praise and children of infants, you have established a stronghold against your enemies to silence the foe and the avenger. So one of the purposes the Lord has ordained for infants and children is that they would silence God's enemies. We get the privilege of raising these eternal souls who can have a hand themselves in changing eternity for the Lord. God can use weak things like children and babies to display his strength. Children are only children for a short time. Genesis 33 says, Jacob replied, "You can see, my Lord, that some of the children are very young, and the flocks and herds have their young too. If they are driven too hard, even for one day, all the animals could die. Please, my Lord, go ahead of your servant. We will follow you slowly at a pace that is comfortable for the livestock and the children. I will meet you at Seir." So this is Jacob after he and his brother Esau reunite. And he's like, this is a season. I got these little babies and I got these young flocks. And one day he can go at a pace that's different. But since he's got these little guys, he's got to go at a different pace because they're only babies for a short time. Like we said, the old women are right, and the Lord knows it. The Lord is willing to walk alongside of you at your pace during this time of life. Children help you awe at God's creative power, Psalm 139. "For you formed my inward parts, you wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth." So babies and children are going to remind us of the cool things that God is capable of. Like, you grow a person in a body. I remember one day I was like, oh man, I grew three people in my body. And then I remembered the placenta. And I was like, oh my gosh, I grew a full other organ too, to like help that baby grow and sustain its life. That's really marvelous to me. There's something about the placenta, just side note, that's like, what happened? I'm growing a baby and I'm growing another organ to help that baby live at the same time. This is a miracle. It's unbelievable. And then if you had or have fertility issues or you adopted your baby, those things are also lead to miracles. And you get to have a different perspective on the Lord because of your own individual journey. Having children is a great privilege. Matthew 22, Jesus said to them, "You are mistaken, not understanding the scriptures nor the power of God. For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels in heaven." So when believers in Christ, those people who have entered into a personal relationship with God based on Christ's death on the cross, those people go to heaven. There is no marriage and there are no babies. Angels don't have babies and people in heaven won't have babies. So humans are the only ones who get to introduce immortal souls to the world, immortal souls who have not existed on the earth before. That is a real privilege. You guys know Alistair Begg. He runs a church in Cleveland. He's from Scotland. He's got a real good accent and is so easy to listen to. I stayed home with my kids full time until my youngest was in first grade, and he's in third grade now. So spent a lot of years at home, you know, wiping butts and noses and going to the playground. And when I struggled being home with them, when I felt like I was really doing nothing all day, except for butt wiping, I would stop and I would read this quote that I'm about to tell you guys. I would give it to other moms when they were struggling. It is still saved on my phone as a note. It has helped me through a lot of troubles. He says, "I once read the story of a full-time homemaker who was asked in a condescending way, 'What do you do?' I bet half of you feel intimidated. Don't. Here's what this woman said in reply to that question. 'I'm socializing two Homo sapiens into the dominant values of the Judeo-Christian tradition, so they might be transformers of the social order into the kind of eschatological utopia God willed for us before the foundation of the earth. What is it you do?'" Ladies, mothers, and grandmothers, you are the shapers of the future alongside your husbands. Your children are your opus. They are your symphony. They will be music to your ears in a future day when they rise up to call you blessed. So thinking about these children and the honor that it is to have a hand in shaping them can change your day. Just stop for a second and be like, the work that I'm doing is valuable and very important. Okay, got to talk about Satan again. Sorry. The author of the Bible's got an enemy. Satan wants to distract you from these biblical truths. He wants to convince you that you need all of this specific gear to love your baby right, or that you're only a good mom if you're on this specific sleep schedule. He wants to steal your joy and kill your happiness. But that is not what the Lord wants for you. In John 10:10, it says, "The thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." God wants us to have an abundant life. He wants us to have life to the fullest, and that includes in parenting, marriage, all of it. He wants us to know him personally, have a relationship with him, and then live an abundant life. Okay, now we got to take a break. Come back in 10. You got to pee or get something for your baby. My clock says 10:55. Okay, ready? Hello? How do I? Oh my God, it works! Or one of these. What's this called? Quiet like a coyote? Quiet coyote. I saw a dead coyote on the road the other day. It was really sad. They're so pretty. All right, ready? Part two, or second half. Okay, as we transition to this next section, which is about confidence, I just want to remind you guys that the Lord has gifted you with the privilege of being a mom, and has enabled, will enable, will continue to enable you to be a mom. We're going to talk about building confidence. We're going to talk about using common sense. Satan's going to want to tell you you can't make the right decisions, that your decisions aren't as good as somebody else's. And some adult out there might be like, this is a bad decision. People are going to tell you you're going to believe. Satan's going to get in there and say that you can't provide the exact specific right care for your baby. And I'm here to tell you that the Lord has gifted you with the ability to do just that. And you are the right mom to parent your baby. And you are uniquely qualified to love your own baby. And I can tell you that until I'm blue in the face, right? But it doesn't mean that you're going to believe me. So we got to talk about confidence a little bit. I have some cool tips and tricks that I learned over the years, but the point is to prepare you and equip you, not just give you my, like, five really good tips for baby-led weaning or whatever. And if you're not a confident person, you can gain confidence because you know and believe that the Lord is there alongside you, helping you to figure some stuff out, all the stuff. Like I said, I had to learn really quick, you guys. 3 kids in 3.5 years was a whirlwind, and I screwed up a lot. I look back now, and I'm like, man, I wish I had done that different. Or like, poor Piper being the first baby, you know, really gets the brunt of like my lack of confidence and poor decision making. Not poor, whatever. Sometimes you screw up, and in hindsight, you're like, gosh, I wish I would have done it different. But you just keep growing as a mom, learning new stuff and changing. But like I said, this isn't a class to share, you know, all my sleep routine, amazing knowledge, or fussy baby ideas. It's to prep you on what's on the way and give you some tools to get by. You're never going to be the perfect parent. and that's fine. It is okay. I'm not the perfect parent, but you are the right parent for the baby that the Lord has given to you. Do not let people, do not let the culture, do not let Satan cause you to question your own ability to love and nurture and care for your own baby. You're never going to know everything, and that is also okay. There is too much to know. There's too much information out there. And then your baby's going to change. And then your second baby is going to be different from your first baby, and you're going to parent that baby different because you're different and they're different. Everything's going to always be changing and different. Babies change a lot of ways and many times over the first 12 months. You gotta try to be flexible when you can and just try to roll with it. You're gonna probably go on vacation. Your baby will likely get sick. Your baby's nap needs are gonna change. And as soon as you think you've figured something out, here comes a growth spurt, or here comes this other thing. Also, you're gonna change a lot of ways in 12 months, and the way that you parent is gonna change. A lot happens in 1 year. And then my tongue-in-cheek advice is always never trust a baby. When all else fails, consider your baby untrustworthy. You think you figured it out, and then here comes a sleep regression, or here comes teeth. They want to keep you on your toes. Don't trust your baby. A lot of people are going to want to give you advice, right? And you do not have to heed the advice of every person who tries to advise you. Most people are well-intended, right? A lot of strangers might even try to give you advice. One time I was in Kroger, and a kid was having a meltdown, like a toddler was having a meltdown. And this old man walks by and goes, "If I were you, I would whoop him right here." And I was like, well, this kid's having a meltdown because he's hungry, because I was like, let's go to the grocery instead of feeding him on time. So it's actually my fault. You got to choose your sources wisely. I did not choose that old man stranger in Kroger. You got to find a veteran mom that you can trust, and we're going to talk more about this at the end. You got to find a doctor whose philosophies you agree with. If you find that you're regularly disagreeing with your doctor, you might need to switch. I had a friend who had a doctor, and after every appointment, she's like, and he said this, and I'm just not really sure, and I don't know what to do. And then the next appointment, she's like, oh, and he said this thing, and I'm just not really down with it. And I was like, hey, you can leave your doctor. I don't care if you've already been going there for 4 months. You can switch doctors and find someone who you vibe with. So don't hesitate to leave your doctor if you guys are not clicking. Find a peer who you can trust. That is a great source, you guys doing it alongside each other. Please be careful about the internet and books. There's so much out there, you guys. I'm not saying that all books are bad, but read it all with a grain of salt. You get to decide what to brush off. You do not have to listen to or consider every piece of advice that comes your way every time your like old aunt is in from out of town. Also, like, we don't have to be rude when we disagree with people, right? There's really clever ways to brush off all of the advice that people are giving you that are kind and not dismissive. You can be like, thanks for the idea. I'm going to consider this. I'm going to talk to my spouse. I'm going to ask my doctor. My favorite is to deflect. Just like start asking a bunch of questions, get that person talking about themselves, and then they'll forget they were even giving me bad advice in the first place. So that's how I like to do it. You can ask for resources. Be like, cool, this is a good idea. Can you text me or email me your resources so I can research it? And then either they forget or they never had them in the first place. But these are ways that you can just kind of like brush off people's advice that you're not interested in. We have to remember that there has been a shift in the transmission and receipt of parenting info. you know, hundreds of years ago, moms would get their info from their mom or their grandma, maybe like an aunt. But now everyone has an opinion, and everyone has a blog, and everyone is saying that they're an expert. So how are we supposed to be confident when there's so much information, right? Like, is every one of these 25 books the best book? Like, some of these books are good, sure. Do I have time to read them all? You know, like, that's a lot of books. These are a lot of books. Which books are the best? There's a lot of them. So there are so many decisions to make, and there are too many options. It's hard to be confident when everything is battling to be the correct thing. Think about just bottles, okay? Do you think these many options were available 20 years ago? No. 50? No. Like, we have too many choices. You know how many bottles I tried for my first kid? A million. And it made me feel like I have no idea what I'm doing. Why can't I even pick the right bottle? She doesn't want to eat any of these. Also, there's so many options about what to do about feeding when they're eating solid foods, what to do about sleeping, what to do about childcare. So what are we supposed to do, right? You got to trust your gut. The Lord made you a mom. If something that a person says or a book says does not feel right, you don't have to do that thing. You get to decide. Moms have been raising babies for many years without websites and without books and without experts. Those moms hundreds of years ago trusted their guts. The interaction I had with a new mom that kind of got my wheels going and helped me to decide to develop this workshop, she would come to me with a question. Amber, this thing's happening. What do I do about it? I'm so stressed out. I'm doing the wrong thing. And I would always say, well, what do you feel like you want to do? And she'd be like, ugh, it's always what you tell me every time. You don't, can you just tell me what to do one of these times? And I'm like, no, I can't tell you what to do. You get to decide. You get the privilege of deciding. And there's so many things about babies, right, that are non-moral issues. There's no right or wrong. And you get to explore, what kind of mom do I want to be? How do I want to handle this situation? It's okay to be confused. But all that being said, you also don't have to fake confidence. This is hard. Babies are confusing. Navigating your life after a baby shows up is very tricky. While you're trusting your gut, you can also give yourself grace, and you don't have to worry if you can't figure something out. But it's not okay to feel so sad, such extreme anxiety or exhaustion that you can't do normal daily care tasks for yourself or for your baby. So while we talk about how you feel, we got to put a plug in for like a postpartum depression screening. If you feel like you can't do normal things every day, can't wash your own body and feed your own self food, you should see your doctor or tell your pediatrician, and they'll give you postpartum screening. Are you parenting based on fear or based on what's best for your own baby? We have talked about pressures from culture and pressures from other people, and you have to think, am I making decisions based on that? When I was a new mom to Piper, I had this playgroup, and another new mom told me, we are all just making decisions about these babies based on what we think other people think we should be doing. And I was like, no. That's not how we should be parenting our babies. We shouldn't be parenting them based on what I think this girl over here thinks is the right decision and how she's going to judge me about the decisions that I'm making. Do not parent based on what you think other people's judgments might be. We don't have to be sidelined because of others' judgment. We don't have to be sidelined because of fear. Fear-based parenting is not putting our trust in the Lord, and that is not what he wants for us. Okay, there's already a lot to figure out, right? Sleep and feeding and schedules. You already have a lot on your plate. And this sweet little baby bundle of joy is going to affect so much, including your relationships. Don't forget about Satan. I'm really sorry. You're like, why is this girl going on about Satan? It's because you're not sleeping and you're going a little loony and you might be under some schemes from Satan. He wants to get in between you and the Lord. He wants you to be down and out. Remember him and his schemes as we go through each of these ways, relationships that are going to be affected. Okay, so becoming a parent is going to affect your relationship with your spouse. Some people, I have heard them say, our marriage is fine. It's going really great. We can handle it. We're going to be so good. And I hope that that's true for you guys or for those people, but you should actually start coming to terms with the fact that changes in your marriage are unavoidable. They're coming. Also, hormones are real. They are a thing, a medical thing. They actually happen. And you're going to do and say things to your husband that you could never imagine you would have said to this person. After every first trimester, when I kind of was coming to, I bought my husband a pair of shoes, and they were called I'm Sorry Shoes. I am sorry for the way that I was this first trimester. I'm not super sure who that girl was. She gave you a real hard time, and I am so sorry. Being polite went full out the window first trimester. Tired, sick, hormones, can't eat anything but crackers. You know, it was miserable. So I'd apologize to poor Ben. Sometimes you might be shocked that you're like, oh, my husband, I actually don't like him today. Hormone shifts and mood changes are real. They will affect you. Sex is going to get affected. Hormones are a factor here, too. Your emotions are different. Your body is different. You're not sleeping. You're not thinking clearly. This is really hard. Your body hurts. You don't feel sexy. It's all against us, right? I know some couples who did not have sex after their baby was born for like 6 months or 9 months. This is not a great idea. This is not advice. That is not what you should strive for. Even though your sex life will be affected in ways that you can't imagine, that you couldn't predict, you still should try to strive to be connected in this area. Some practical tips for dealing with these challenges. Some people are like, we're just going to schedule sex. We do it Tuesday nights after the baby goes to sleep and Sunday mornings before the baby wakes up. Or maybe quickies are going to become your friend. Maybe, I don't know, nap time real quick. If you don't feel close or feel connected, remember that what's true is this is your man who you love, who you married, who you had a baby with. Feelings are fleeting, but what is true? What is the truth about your relationship and your love for him? You got to adjust your expectations about your time for sex, about your body, about how quick or long it's going to go, what it's going to look like. You are still connecting with your husband in an important and valuable way for both of you. Nike's like, just do it, right? It doesn't sound fluffy. It's not romantic. It doesn't sound super desirable. But look at this. Next slide has this blurb that I found from actually a secular article. It says, sex after baby is more difficult than it sounds. Modern women are trained to shun the wifely duty. If they're in the mood for sex, no problem. Maintenance sex, however, is akin to selling out. It shouldn't be. There's nothing wrong with sex just for the sake of pleasing your husband, just as there's nothing wrong with romantic gestures just for the sake of husbands pleasing their wives. Marriage is a partnership. Sometimes we do something for our partner just because they are our partner and that thing would make them happy. Sex is only one of those things. Furthermore, sex for married people is also a way to simply reconnect. With all of the stresses of early parenthood, from baby concerns to family tensions, sex doesn't have to be the ripped clothes thrown to the corner variety to be a good thing. Sorry for going sappy, but sometimes it is just about physical intimacy. So keep that in the back of your brain. It's not always going to be the way you hope, the way you want, the way you're expecting, or the way that it used to be. But the goal is intimacy with your man, and that is a good goal. Your time spent together is going to be affected. This is a no-brainer. You're probably already expecting this or experiencing it. Your time is structured differently. Your time is condensed. Your time is interrupted. We tried to watch The Great British Bake Off the other night in the basement, and kids came down. We're like, go to bed. It's 8 o'clock. It's like date time. We got to get our show in real quick before we do like our, you know, marriage business meeting about our schedule and our budget. We got to watch British Bake Off first. I had to pause it too many times, you guys. And my kids are old, and they still interrupted our show, okay? So it's still happening. It's going to happen to you. There's going to be more demands on your time. Your extended family, your in-laws might want to see you more because you got this baby now. Depending on whether you work or you stay home is going to create different challenges for your time spent together. So what can you do? You might have to be selective about the things that you commit to. You might have to say no to some things. We still have to do this all the time. We still have to decide what do we need to say no to so that our time together is solid and protected and sacred. You might have to turn off or set down your technology. Like, sure, we watch British Bake Off. Like, we're trying to figure out who's going to win. We got a little contest going. So watch a show together or, like, scroll TikTok, but probably not for the whole evening, right? Like, look at each other in the face and do your budget meeting and your schedule meeting. Try to connect over a quick read together, a short game or a walk. You can bond while you're doing chores. So lame and boring, but your downtime has decreased really dramatically. You got to make the most of the time that you do have together. And then make plans to leave your baby. If it's for 1 hour, if it's to walk around the block, to run an errand, leave the house alone together, and you will be surprised how refreshing this time can be. Okay, there's new expectations. Who does what? Who goes where? How much work everyone's doing in the house? Having the expectation that you're going to agree on this is a big one. But you guys are carrying different philosophies about family. You're coming from different upbringings. Where does the trash can go? Who takes it out? You're different temperamentally. You might expect that he understands what you're going through. He does not. You might expect that he's going to sympathize with how hard things are for you. He might not. Sometimes they just don't understand it, and they mean well, but you probably should not expect that he will always understand. What could you expect? Fights. I would put fights in the yes expectations category. Okay, so how to deal with these challenges? You got to clarify your roles and your chores. You cannot always expect that he's going to know what you want or what you need. Be reasonable when you're asking for help, and remember that he is not always going to get it. You got to normalize that this is a challenge. Sit down and talk about who's doing what. Who's doing what for the first week? Who's doing what for the first 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 3 months. Keep updating it. Keep updating who's doing what and when. Clarify things. And then normalize that this is a challenge. Take these fights in stride. Don't be surprised that the fights are happening. Don't be surprised that you're disagreeing. Figure out your best way to get through this kind of inevitable, challenging situation. I have friends who also had three kids really quick, like we did, and their plan was whatever happens between midnight and 6 a.m., we forget about. It's like it didn't exist. They do not talk about what they said to each other during that time frame. They don't have to repair in the morning. It's just like this magic zone where you can be crazy and say whatever you want, and then they move on with their lives. Some people can't do that, and they have to repair in the morning what happened overnight. Some people need a couple days to recover from your fight. So normalize that it's a challenge and figure out, you know, your own marriage vibe and tendencies. You guys are going to have shifted focus and new priorities. You're not going to be ready for or used to how this sweet little baby is going to take over your life. It's going to be hard for your husband to understand, as his life might not change that much at first. Like, maybe he's home from work for a minute, and then he just goes back, and he's living his same schedule and doing his same stuff. You're maybe at home, or your work has shifted, but likely he might be largely unaffected in his day-to-day life. You're going to be shocked at the way you focus on your baby, either because you're just so overcome with love at how perfect and beautiful and amazing they are, or because they're struggling, and it's hard for you to think of something else. Money fights are probably going to show up because you have to make changes in what's focused on and shift your priorities. Probably going to have less football parties, more birthday parties, less nights out, more nights in, more money spent on babysitters. And then your baby's going to change the focus of your conversations. They might be more businesslike and practical, dealing with mundane kind of childcare things. Probably less opinions and less feelings, and like maybe like a little bit less fun. Like, but I promise that it won't be less fun forever. So how do you deal with these challenges? You got to remember that your husband is your partner in all of this, and not just your baby's dad. You guys are a team, and how do you stay a team? You're gonna have to weather a lot of things about priorities and focus for many years. So figure out how it looks to be unified when you guys disagree. Remember that you and your spouse are the center of your family. Strive to make this true. The baby seems like the center of your life. One day that baby will grow up and get big and leave, and you and your husband will remain. So start at the beginning by understanding and realizing that you guys are the center of the household. And then discuss what things, people, events you guys are gonna prioritize. Don't assume. Sit down, communicate, sit with planners, sit with your phone. Make this an ongoing conversation as your baby keeps growing. Your marriage is going to be affected in really positive ways as well. Your love for your husband might really grow because you're going to see him hold and sing to and fall asleep with and play with your baby, and your heart's just going to explode at how cute it is. You get to have a bunch of cool new inside jokes because you're like up together at 3 a.m. trying to figure stuff out. And it's going to be really funny, and I think it's super fun. And then you're going to see him come through in really unexpected ways when you, like, cannot go another second. You just cannot do it. When you don't have it in you, he will, and he'll be amazing. And, like, look, like, oh, my goodness. Just your husband cuddling your baby and your baby smiling is so fun and super happy. Nothing better than a little baby falling asleep on your man while he watches Sports Center in a hotel. We were on a trip. And Ben has more than one hat, if you were wondering. Two pictures, same hat. Okay, becoming a parent is going to affect your relationship with the Lord. You're going to have to establish a new level of trust with the Lord. Look at Jeremiah 1:5. I knew you before I formed you in your mother's womb. Before you were born, I set you apart and appointed you as my prophet to the nations. You're going to have new fears, new struggles, new anxieties. We've talked about all of this. And yes, this is your baby, but this baby is also a stewardship, a person that the Lord knew before you did, a person that the Lord created. And it's really important to learn and to trust that the Lord wants your baby to be safe and healthy, just like you do. You get a new understanding of love that you probably haven't experienced before. And what I'm about to say might sound crazy or offensive, and you might tell me that I'm lying, but you love your baby a fraction of how much the Lord loves your baby, a fraction of how much the Lord loves you. So how do I know the Lord loves your baby more than you do? Look at this verse. Most people would not be willing to die for an upright person, though someone might perhaps be willing to die for a person who is especially good. But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ, his little baby, to die for us while we were still sinners. Romans 5. So you've got to picture Hitler or Charles Manson, right? And then imagine exchanging your baby for that person's life. That is what the Lord did. That is how deep his love goes. He loves your baby so much that he gave up his own son so that your baby could have an opportunity to go to heaven. He gave up his son knowing that people would reject him. I can't fathom doing that, and I bet you can't, but the Lord did it. That's how deep his love goes. You're going to get to have a new understanding of how God wants to bless you. Luke 11, you fathers, if your children ask for a fish, do you give them a snake? Or if they ask for an egg, do you give them a scorpion? Of course not. So if you sinful people know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your heavenly Father give the Holy Spirit to those who ask him? So you want to give your baby everything, right? Every toy, everything to make her comfortable, everything to make her laugh and smile. And you're going to realize the Lord wants that for me too. The Lord wants to bless me in those ways too. He wants to bless my baby as well. You might get a new level of compassion and new ways to view people. Your heart for people might grow because you're realizing that God views that person the way that you view your own baby. I actually did this the other day with somebody that was getting on my nerves. And I was like, this annoying person is so beloved by her mom. This annoying person is so beloved by the Lord. And it shifted my focus, gave me some more compassion for this person I was annoyed with. Okay, some tips for dealing with the challenges in this relationship. You can have less time, less focus, less energy. You got to come to terms with these things being different. They just will be different. As with any relationship, your resources are going to be sapped. Mom brain is real. The studies are out there. Your brain's very affected. So this is going to affect how you read, how you think, how you process what you read. And that's all going to change how you spend time with the Lord during this time frame. So how can you adjust with it? Have a plan. Just what's the plan? It can be all different plans for all of you. Someone's like, I got an ABC plan, and A means I read my Bible before the baby gets up. Shoot, the baby got up earlier. Okay. B means A's gone. B means I read the Bible when the baby naps. Oh, bummer. The baby's going to nap in the car because we have a doctor's appointment. Okay, B's gone. C goal is when husband gets home, I'm like, here you go for 20 minutes. I'm going to go spend time with the Lord. So some people do that ABC way. Without a plan, nothing might happen. You might not end up with time with the Lord for many days in a row for a while. But based on your temperament, your study needs, what kind of time you know you need with the Lord, what kind of plan can you make? You could find some friends and swap time with them so everybody can get some time for prayer and word. We're going to talk more about friends and community later, but make use of them to get 30 minutes with the Lord. And then there's grace, you guys. You got to be okay with what you are able to do while also striving to do just a little bit more. Use podcasts, use teachings, you know, from whatever website you're listening to, the Dwell website, something else, spiritual. Read the baby Bible to your baby. That counts. Go ahead. Put on an audio Bible. That counts. There's a lot of grace here, guys. Grace, 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 grace. Some days you're going to have a plan. You're going to try to get your time with the Lord, and then you can't, or you won't. You fall asleep. Something comes up. Just apply grace. That's what it's there for. Becoming a parent is going to affect your relationship with your friends. And this is going to look different depending on the friend and the friendship. Does that friend also have kids? Are you the first or the last among your friends to have kids? Friends with kids are going to understand the struggle of how you're spending your time. Those without kids might not. You're going to have less time, more distractions, differing priorities. It's going to be hard to get out. These friendships are going to have a lot of similar struggles to your relational marriage struggles in terms of how do you get time together that's quality and uninterrupted. Your friends are going to love your baby. This is a totally awesome perk. It gives me so much joy to see how my friends love my babies and love my big kids. Now, it's a really cool dynamic to our relationship. And then your kids' friends, wait a second, your friends' kids can become your kids' friends. This is awesome. This can be like built-in family. Might take a couple years to arrive here, but it will happen. Here's my pals and their kids with my kids. We went to the Red River Gorge with my friends I've known since I was 15, and our kids are friends now, and it's so fun. And then, listen, if you ever go to Nashville, go to Five Daughters Bakery. Write it down. Amber told you, okay? We went there on the way home from the beach with our friends, whose all our kids are friends, had a great time. So this, you know, I was trying to find, like, a picture I'd used for this last time. My kids were little, and I was like, no, it's really cool to give people a picture of, like, 10 years down the road, this is a cool thing that you can have. You can go on trips with your pals. You can go get a 100-layer cronut from Five Daughters Bakery in Nashville with your pals. You can go on spring break. And it's a really beautiful part of our lives that our friends' kids are our kids' friends. There's challenges here, practical tips for dealing with them. You got to get really creative. I find that friends are one of the first things to go when someone has a baby, but these are really important relationships to make time for. Take walks, go to playgrounds, have a third mom watch your kids. She might have three kids for 20 minutes, but you guys can rotate, figure out a way to get 20 minutes alone having a chat. Have really low expectations for your time together. You might spend the whole time feeding, changing, chasing babies, dealing with babies. That's okay, because you guys are in it together. You get to do it together. Make an effort to have some kind of regular hangout without children. I don't know how often. Once a month, every other month, something that's regular. And then also talk about different stuff. You love talking about your kids and you love talking about mom stuff, but try to remember that she and you have other stuff going on in your lives and ask questions about non-kid topics. Stay connected in all of these different areas of your life. Okay, family and in-laws, right? That's like as fun as the sleep one. The way that a parent affects the family and in-laws relationships are going to be different for everyone all of the time. There's no standard here for this being affected or how to handle it. There's a lot of factors. Is the family local? How many grandkids are there? What's the spiritual condition? What's your current relationship with them like? These relationships are really important. And as the mom, I've kind of figured out over the years that as the mom, you largely set the tone for these relationships, even with your in-laws. If you consider it, you know, if you have a good relationship with the in-laws and you consider it a joy to go over their house, your husband will jump on board. If you consider it a joy to see them, your kids will eventually also consider it a joy to see them. So you really set the tone for that. And then the way that you operate has a lot to do with your history in your own family that you grew up in. You might want to do things how your family did. Your husband's going to want to do it how he grew up. You just got to communicate. You guys have to figure that out, how you want to handle that amongst yourself. And then understand that changes are coming. Your relationship with your own family is going to change in ways that you couldn't foresee. Your relationship with your in-laws is going to change in ways that you couldn't foresee. It could get much better. Your relationships could improve. They could get worse. There's no way to know until it gets here. But you can still have boundaries and love coexisting together. If things are going poorly, you can set strong boundaries while still loving someone. You can still let them feel important. You might develop a new level of respect for your own parents or for your husband's parents. My mom turned 18 and had me 2 weeks later, and then she kicked my dad out when I was like a year old. So I'm like a new mom, right, with a great husband and a good house and a good community, realizing, oh my gosh, these hardships that I'm enduring just pale in comparison to what my mom had to deal with when she had me and made me just increase in love for her so much. New form of gratitude and appreciation. Depending on your relationship, your family might step up their game with their time, with their money. Relationally, it could be really awesome and give you more love and appreciation for those guys. But there will be challenges, right? So how do you deal with them practically? Figure out with your husband how you're going to handle holidays, how you're going to handle issues with his mom, maybe, how you're going to handle them coming to visit. My husband communicates schedules and handles all conflicts with his family as necessary. I'm not here to do that for you. If your mom wants to come down on a Saturday and hang, you got to figure it out. I'm not going to figure it out. And then I do handle stuff with my mom. Realize everyone's tendencies, especially your own. Are you really controlling? Are you demanding? Has your family or your in-laws become controlling or nitpicking? Just kind of realize what the other person's tendency is. Realize what their perspective might be. Could help you decide what to brush off in a situation or in your relationship, when to give them the benefit of the doubt. But then sometimes you do have to address stuff and have a weird conversation. Decide what your non-negotiables are. When our first was born and my husband's mom would come down to watch her, we would be like, she will go to bed alone in her own bed at the time that we tell you. These are our non-negotiables. Because I knew that grandma was going to hold that baby all night in some rocking chair. And we're like, you thought that was safe 30 years ago. Things did not always go safely. Please put our baby to bed when we want you to, where we want you to. And if you don't, we're going to have to talk about it. So we had to really clearly communicate our non-negotiables. Boundaries by Cloud and Townsend is really good. Probably you've read one of them. There's so many different versions. This is really good for in-law and family kind of stuff. Okay, becoming a parent's going to affect your relationship with your ministry and your church. You have a new ministry and a new disciple as soon as your baby's born. This is your disciple now. You're going to be mentoring them for their entire life. You will just be helping that baby turn into a person and figure out life forever. In terms of your ministry and your church, you're not going to be as available as before. You're going to be tired physically, mentally, emotionally. Your resources are sapped. Things are going to be too late. They're going to be too early. They're going to be too far. You won't be as available to attend everything as you were before. But you will always have a quotey fingers reason not to go to something, right? So you have to find your balance between your practical concerns, like, oh, the baby has a nap schedule, or the baby has the sniffles. The balance for that and the need for thriving, regular relationships with other people. You get a whole new field of ministry open to you. Moms at playgrounds want to talk to other moms about mom stuff. You can make so many cool pals at playgrounds, at COSI, whatever. Doors are really easily opened for new friendship and for different conversations with new people. Practical tips for these challenges. Just try to go. Try to go to something. Make an attempt to not isolate yourself. Go for 5 minutes to a hangout, to a meeting. Make the attempt. This is really good for you and for your well-being. Find ways to be available. You can pray. You can talk on the phone. There's ways that you can make yourself available to the group that you're in and to the ministry that you're trying to serve. Know your tendencies. Are you a homebody? Because you always find a reason to be home. It's not that hard. So put things in place to help you go. Pack your stuff early. Every time I would get home from somewhere, it's like, here's the diaper bag. I'm going to repack it right now because I don't want to be scrambling when I'm trying to get out the door tomorrow. So let me get everything back in it right now. Make it easier for me to leave. Ask for accountability. Offer to drive somebody. Go with your husband. Know what your tendencies are. And then I want to make a special point for this section in terms of your ministry and your church, the ways that you might be serving. Like, you're limited when you have a baby, and things are different, yes. But you have to be really wary of leaning on the temptation to take the free pass all of the time, to miss a meeting, to miss an event, or miss a hangout. You guys can do really big things when you're a new mom. You are not useless. You're not so tired and drained that you can't meet a new pal, that you can't have an amazing conversation, that you can't go to a meeting. The Lord wants to make use of you in this phase of life, even if it does look different. And then finally, there's raising kids in community. We're almost done. The family is not the central feature of the New Testament. The family unit is important, and the family unit is special. But the church, God's community, God's group of people, God's family of believers, is the featured unit of the New Testament. And community is a place where love happens and where truth is shared. There's a lot of one another passages in the Bible, and you cannot do all of those in your household. You need community to make that happen. Oasis is really great, but that shouldn't be all of it. That shouldn't be all the spiritual input that your kid gets. You need intergenerational, cross-cultural, socioeconomic divide crossing network of relationships. Raise your kids in community for sure. So what's this? You're like, I got a baby. My baby's 3 weeks old. I'm not like, you know, going to all of the things. I'm not sending them with another family to the pumpkin patch tomorrow. They're too little. You do get to put roots down now, early, ASAP. Take your baby with you to meetings. Wear your baby the whole time if you want. You don't have to pass your baby around. Maybe you want to pass your baby around. Do that too. You get to figure out what doing this now looks like for you. You gotta find mom friends. Don't be a lone ranger. You gotta have some mom friends. Be intentional about having moms with similar ages to yours to go out with, to meet weekly, to talk about kids, to talk about life. When Piper was born, I had a specific group of moms that met in my house every week until we all started having our second kid. And for some reason, it just kind of fell away. Some people were going back to work. Some people had developed different nap time schedules, whatever. That group was amazing. I loved that group. And I still do keep in touch with some of those people. But now I have a different group of mom friends. Also amazing. But you got to get out there. Make sure you have some mom friends. Make sure you're walking in this life alongside people who are in the same similar struggles as you right now and can have the same joys that you do right now. Maybe find an older mom or two that you trust to kind of like mentor you, kind of handhold you through this season of life. Do stuff with other families. Have a family over for dinner. Do you have an activity planned as a family? Invite another family along. Put these roots down now, and then let people love you and love your baby. Let people bring your food, you guys. Let people wash your dishes. Please let them wash your dishes. Like, no, I don't want you to come over. It's too dirty. That's the point. Let them in your house. Recently, I had a friend doing a bunch of laundry for me. Got real sick last year, did a bunch of laundry. People brought me a bunch of food. Still happening. The village with the old kids, it's still there. Had a lot of help. That's it. This is a link, a really bad one, so maybe I should remove it for a postpartum depression quiz scale kind of thing, but you could just search it on Google yourself. And that's my email. If you have a question or if you want this slideshow or whatever, I'm willing to share it with you. I don't know what time it is. Awesome. That's all I got. You guys have any questions? Or maybe you figured it out since we got here 2 hours ago. Conversations about like you're disagreeing about something or yeah. How's your, here, I'll shut this off. So